Good evening. Sometimes students do not like what happens to them as they continue in their studies and meditations of this message and find that the world becomes more objective to them. Even their own lives and their own bodies become more objective than heretofore. And they are able to look out at this world as a beholder. In the very first book, The Infinite Way, you will note that one of the objectives of this study is to become a beholder. And in doing this, you lose a great deal of what constitutes a great part of human life. That is emotion. You are never quite so hurt by the negative aspects of human life, but neither can you quite rejoice over the good things as you once did. The feelings do not enter into these things the way they used to. And many students resent this at first. They feel as if they were losing something in life because their pet cat or their pet dog isn't quite as important to them as once upon a time, or perhaps their favorite art objects aren't quite as important in their experience, and perhaps even some of their friendships aren't quite as intense. And so there is a loss in human emotion, there is a loss in some of the human values as you go on to the spiritual life, but then there are gains. And the gains are of really utmost importance for this reason. When you are a beholder of life, you really are beholding what God is doing. You are not looking out at life and wondering what is going to happen or merely observe what is going to happen. It isn't that kind of being a beholder. It is this kind of beholder that waking up in the morning you realize this is God's day. This is the day the Lord hath made. And then you wonder, now, what is God going to do with this day in its relationship to me? What experiences am I going to have through God as I go through this day? And then, in that objective way, you go through the day almost like Mr. Hoover, when he discovered that prosperity was just around the corner. You sort of want to edge up on that corner to see prosperity. And so it is, you really go through the day with the feeling of, what is God bringing to pass in this hour, the next hour, the hour after? There is always that feeling of, something is just around the corner, and whatever it is the product of God, the effect of God, the activity of God, because you have already seen that there are not two powers. Now here in the infinite way is where you come to the second step in spiritual healing. Last night we took the first steps, and tonight we'll take the second steps. And here You have to watch yourself carefully because you are going through a training period for centuries, tens of centuries. We have been born and brought up in a life of two powers. And if you look at human history, you will see that the evil power has always been greater in every century than the good power. You will find that there have been more years of war than of peace. You will find there have been more years of lack than of prosperity. You will find that there have been more people sick at any one time than well at any one time. You will find that in every single century, the history of severe disease, accident, and death, right from the cradle to the grave, has been far greater than the power of good, of harmony. Now you are coming to where you are being taught that the only reason that we experience these evils is that we have accepted this century-century-old belief in two powers, and thereby we have created them. Now, as you begin to perceive that there is neither a good power nor a bad power, there is only a spiritual power, your attention drops away from both the evil and the good, and you find yourself less identified with sensations that arise from that which is good and that which is evil. That is where impersonalization comes in. You are able to see evil without emotion, without pinning it on to anyone, without, one might also almost say, sympathy. Without sympathy. Why? Because you recognize the nature of the appearance, and instead of accepting it as a real fact, you accept it as an appearance or an illusory experience. In the same way that in watching much of human good, you instantly have the feeling of, ah, yes, yes, so it would appear. But if it isn't of God, it still will not be permanent. And therefore, there is no use in rejoicing over it. As I say, it takes a great deal of pleasure out of the human side of life, just as it takes a great deal of misery out of the human side of life, but it does replace those human emotions with an inner conviction that behind this visible scene there is a spiritual reality, and at any moment and every moment you are expecting it to come into full view. In this phase of our spiritual healing work, you will discover, as we all have, that when a call for help comes, our first and natural human emotion is to want to change the evil condition to a good one, or the evil appearance to a good one. We want to reduce the fever, or we want to change that chill into normal temperature. The first reaction always is a desire to change the human appearance. But if one is to succeed in spiritual healing, they must very quickly bring to their conscious awareness that, ah, no. No, not changing evil to good, but beholding the spiritual. It is as if we had an evil appearance here, and we were trying to change it into a good appearance here, but as a spiritual healer, we look right down this middle and say, neither evil nor good, but spiritual. So it is. In proportion, as we can keep ourselves from decrying the evil and trying to bring about the good, in proportion, as we can realize that the object of our healing ministry is not changing disease to health, for health is only one of those temporary conditions that turn to disease tomorrow, next week, or next year, but rather that we are looking right down the middle and realizing that there is a spiritual perfection right here, where there is an appearance of either good or evil. There is actually a spiritual reality. Of course, the mere fact of an evil appearance shows forth the possibility of changing it to a good appearance. And as you so well know, every good appearance is just waiting to be turned into an evil one. The peace on earth is just a momentary pause until someone starts a war. Being in perfect health today is just a momentary pause until either the germs or the calendar get at work. And so it is that if in this human picture we were volleying back and forth between sickness and health, between lack and abundance, we would just be on a merry-go-round that goes round and round and round and round, but never gets anywhere. We would just be going up and down and up and down and never getting anywhere. It is only when you come to the realization that the spiritual ministry follows the words of the Master, my kingdom is not of this world. Once you begin to perceive the nature of that statement, my kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is a spiritual kingdom in which everything is intact. My kingdom is under the direction, protection, maintenance, and sustenance of its divine principle, God. My kingdom, well, in my kingdom there is no darkness. In my kingdom there is no darkness. Ah, but there again, there is an inference that darkness is evil. And we have to rise above that very statement. And we can. There is a psalm. It may possibly be 139. In which it says that to thee darkness and light are the same. Darkness and light are the same. There's no question of getting rid of darkness to get light, because there you have two-ness again. It is when you can say that in the spiritual kingdom darkness and light are one, that in the eyes of God there is no difference between light and darkness. In other words, there is neither light nor darkness in any physical sense. There is only that light which we call spirit, which isn't a light. The word light has no reference whatsoever to that which we call light. Light, in the spiritual sense, is the illumined consciousness, and not illumined by a light, but by wisdom. So that when we say, whereas before I was blind, now I see, we are not referring to blindness or to eyesight. We are speaking of whereas before I was in ignorance, now I have attained wisdom. We call ignorance darkness, and we call wisdom light, but there is neither wisdom nor light about it, except in the use of it in this way. So it is. And don't believe for a moment that this isn't difficult, that it doesn't require days and weeks and months of training before you can say to yourself, in my kingdom, light and darkness is the same. Therefore, I am not trying to change darkness into light. I am not trying to get rid of darkness and to get light. But in my sight, darkness and light are one. Well, it sounds a little fantastic to go from there and say sickness and disease are one. But in one sense, you can see that that's true, in the sense that disease can in any moment become health, and that health in any moment can become disease. In that sense, they're really one. They're just two opposite ends of the same stick. When you then can say, as far as I'm concerned, disease and health are one, and I'm not seeking to get rid of one and get the other, I'm seeking only to realize spiritual wisdom, spiritual truth, realize a divine presence. Ah, then you will begin to perceive the spiritual nature of this universe. It is only when you are trying to get rid of something or to get something that you have left the spiritual universe for human concepts. In the sight of God, darkness and light are one. In spiritual realization, neither disease nor health have any part in the spiritual life. All that exists in the spiritual life is God, Spirit, infinitely and eternally manifested as individual, incorporeal being. Of course, you can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell incorporeal being. Therefore, you only experience it in your consciousness. And once you experience it in your consciousness, you will really understand the meaning of light and darkness are one, sin and purity are one, disease and health are one. What is that one? Mortal illusion, maya, appearances. That is the one. Whether you are beholding sickness today or health tomorrow, you are beholding an illusion of sense. You are not beholding reality until you behold in your spiritual awareness incorporeal spiritual being. The goal is possible of attainment, at least in the measure that we can look out upon this human world and say, what has it profited the world? All of its wars? The answer is nothing. And then you might add, but what hath it profited the world? All the armistice days, all the days on which the war stopped? And the answer is nothing. Wars inevitably gave way to peace. Peace inevitably gave way to wars. What profit have we had of all these wars and peace? And then you'll perceive what I mean by saying spiritually, it isn't war or peace we're seeking. It is the government of God. Spiritual government, divine government. And where does this take place? In our consciousness. That is where it must be realized. Do you not see that no matter how many answers have come forth on solving the problems of the world, tomorrow the problems break out in new forms, greater forms, and that the end of all of this is going to come only when we perceive the nature of spiritual power. Only when we realize that spiritual power has nothing to do with good conditions today and evil conditions tomorrow, but rather with the perception, your perception and mine, that we are not seeking to change the conditions of matter, but to realize the omnipresence of spirit. That we are not seeking to turn sickness to health or war to peace. We are seeking the government of God, the revelation and the realization of God in our consciousness. You see, all of this changes your whole mode of life, because under the law, that is, under our old way of living, the best we could hope for was to turn some evil condition into a good one, some negative condition into a positive one. Even in the realization that there was very little chance that it would be permanent. And yet, we were always striving for those temporary moments of health, or temporary moments of peace, or temporary moments of harmony. Now, we forsake that path by realizing that we are going from the law to grace. Now, under grace, there is no such thing as a change one day or another. Under grace, you do not have changing conditions. You have only the progressive unfoldment of spiritual government. In helping us to arrive at this consciousness where we are not seeking to change the negative to the positive, we have a help in our particular work, and that help is the revelation of one power. As you know, always in the past, we have not only tried to use one power to overcome another power, but when it has been impossible to find human powers to meet our needs, as for instance when we couldn't find a medicine that would cure a particular ill, or when we found that an operation wouldn't save us, when we found there was no human force or power to overcome the evil condition in our experience, then we turned to God and expected to find a spiritual power to do what the material powers couldn't do. In other words, what we humanly can't do, now we'll say, God, you do. But that hasn't done too much for the world. All of these thousands of years of temples, synagogues, churches, entreating, pleading with God to do something about these earthly conditions. The earthly conditions are going right on and multiplying. But in this realization of one power, you stop not only seeking some material power with which to meet your need, but you stop seeking a spiritual power. When you do, you are getting very close to the understanding of the nature of spiritual power. Once you come to see that you are no longer seeking a spiritual power with which to work out material powers, overcome material powers. Once you have come to see that because there is only one power, there is no power over which or on which to use a power. In other words, if there is only one power, there is no power to use, because there is nothing to use it on or against or over. Think, this is important to you. This appears throughout the Infinite Way writings, because from the beginning, this is the state of consciousness that the Infinite Way has tried to bring us to. That state of consciousness in which, when we are in meditation or treatment, that we are not trying to use the power of God, that we are not acknowledging anything for which we need the power of God. In other words, we are trying to come into the consciousness of God as the only power. Think, we are trying to come into the consciousness of God as the only power. This compels us to look at any and every form of discord, and then realize with the master, what did hinder you? There is but one power. Or before the tomb of Lazarus, I need not pray. In other words, since there is but one power, there is nothing to use this power on, against, or for. You will be surprised, the change that takes place in your life, the moment you are able to release God. Release God. God is about his business. God is the creative, maintaining, and sustaining influence of the spiritual universe. God governs his universe by grace. And this, not tomorrow or next week, this has been going on from everlasting to everlasting and will continue from everlasting to everlasting without your bribing God, influencing God, praying to God, pleading with God, or doing anything else to get God to do his own work. God is, and this includes the truth, that God is doing his own work. Our function in prayer and meditation is to realize this truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Know this truth. There is but one power. Know this truth. To the evil appearance thou couldst have no power over me unless it were given thee of God. Know this truth, that in the kingdom of God, light and darkness are the same. You will find yourself developing a state of consciousness that is not volleying back and forth between the evil and the good, but is holding itself, at least in some measure of stability, to the spiritual path, to the spiritual realization. God is, but in order to realize that God is, you have to encompass what we call time, even rise above time. Because you can see that in is or isness, there is no time. God's isness is from everlasting to everlasting. Therefore, nothing has ever gotten outside of the jurisdiction of the isness of God. Nothing in the spiritual kingdom has gone wrong. in the human scene, everything has gone wrong because we have not seen that there is but one power. We have not seen that there is no way to use one power over another because there is no power to use it against, on, for. Your whole consciousness has to change from its material base. It's functioning in two powers, to this ability to sit back and meditate. God is. God is, and that is enough to know. God is. In him is no darkness, but if there were, it wouldn't make any difference. For in him, darkness and light are the same. My kingdom is not of this world, because in my kingdom there are not two powers, there are not two beings. And therefore, now watch this. Therefore, your evil appearances and your good appearances are equally illusory. Can you begin to develop your consciousness to that point where you perceive that the good appearance is as illusory as the evil appearance? Can you bring your state of consciousness to that point where you can see that in the entire kingdom of God, it were absolutely impossible for there to be anything of a changeable nature, anything of a discordant or inharmonious nature, anything of a nature that needed healing, changing, improving? Can you see yourself coming into that state of consciousness in which you are no longer hypnotized by appearances, where you are not compelled from within yourself to try instantly to change the evil to the good and to try to hold on to whatever good appearance there may be? This does not in any way affect your outer life. You are always dealing with suffer it to be so now. In other words, as this spiritual realization comes to you and your life becomes more harmonious, you are no longer dealing with a good appearance that was once evil. You are now dealing with the spiritual reality which has come into view. You now come into the experience of an unchanging harmony. You begin to feel yourself at that point when you are no longer as concerned with the outer effect as you once were. When you have come to that place of looking at the appearance, good or bad, and realizing its illusory nature. Some of you will have a great trouble with attaining this consciousness, because in some of your metaphysical backgrounds, you have been taught to deny the evil, and you have rejoiced at the appearance of the good. Even an appearance that tomorrow may change back to the evil. Concerning ourselves with the nature of the appearance is indulging the hypnotism. Concerning ourselves with the nature of the appearance is perpetuating the hypnotism. In other words, your patient has 103 fever. And tomorrow morning you get a telephone call, it's only 100.5. Be watchful that you aren't rejoicing. Because you are rejoicing in an appearance that 2 hours from now might be 104. And then you'll wonder what happened to your demonstration. Well, your demonstration wasn't a good one because it was concerned with appearances. And it was rejoicing at one appearance as against another. Whereas spiritually, you should have been in between and realize that in the kingdom of God, 99 and 104 are only numbers, not conditions. That very attempt to reduce the fever, that very rejoicing in the coming down of the temperature, that is a part of the human hypnosis. It is only when, from your spiritual standpoint, you can within yourself realize to him light and darkness is the same. I do not recommend that you tell the mother of the child that you don't care if it has 106 fever. Mothers don't like to hear that. I don't recommend that you say to parents, it doesn't make any difference whether your child is good or bad. I don't recommend that. But I do recommend that in your spiritual ministry, which you're living morning, noon, and night, that you yourself maintain within yourself a spiritual balance in the realization that in the kingdom of God, there is neither good nor evil, there is only spirit. In the kingdom of this world, an appearance of evil or an appearance of good is equally illusory. This I recommend for your individual state of consciousness. We have absolutely no right to speak these things to the public. We have absolutely no right to give these things to the beginner on the spiritual path. Why? Well, I'm speaking to you from the standpoint of the PhD of mysticism. The patient who comes to you is still in grammar school. I'm speaking to you from the highest revelations of mystical truth, esoteric truth, the kingdom of God, which is invisible and incorporeal to human sight, but which is tangible and real to those who have the spiritual vision to behold it. And if you wish to bring out in your families and in your spiritual ministry a spiritual demonstration of Christhood, do not concern yourself with the momentary appearances, but hold fast within yourself to the spiritual truth. Once you have this one power, the other comes easier. It becomes easier to realize, yes, if there is only one power, then there cannot be good and evil. In fact, there cannot even be good or evil. Because to use either of those terms is to use relative terms. And good and evil are relative words with relative meanings. The kingdom of God is within you. The kingdom of his peace is within you. His glory is within you. You are the temple of the Spirit, and therefore you are spiritual. You are the temple of the Spirit. You are the temple of the real. You are the temple of God's being. And God's being is infinite perfection. God lives your life. Your life is immortal and eternal. God is spirit, therefore your life is spiritual. God is spirit, therefore your body is spiritual. And any appearance of evil or of good is illusory. Any appearance of evil or good is finite and temporary and changeable. But hold to the truth of being. Hold to this truth that I and my Father are one. And as the Father is spirit, I am spirit. As the Father is my soul, so am I soul. As the Father is the substance of being, eternal, immortal substance, so is the substance of my being. And any appearance, evil or good, is illusory. Only through my spiritual consciousness can I behold my spiritual identity. I cannot see your spiritual identity with my eyesight. I can perceive your spiritual identity through the fourth dimensional consciousness, through the Christ consciousness, through spiritual awareness. Just as God can look through light and darkness and behold them as one, so can the spiritually illumined look through the appearance of good humanhood and bad humanhood and behold Christhood. Now this is the important function of your life on this path, to be able to look not at the good human appearance and rejoice in it, but to look through the good human appearance as well as through the evil human appearance and behold Christhood. You can do it. We all can do it. It requires some discipline, some training, because we are overcoming the effects of perhaps hundreds of generations of those who have passed on to us a belief in two powers, a belief in good, a belief in evil, whereas we are throwing aside both the good and the evil to behold the spiritual. We are throwing aside good health and bad health in order to attain the realization of our Christhood, which is our permanent identity in God. Only then can you say, I have meat the world knows not of. You're not saying this because you're a good human being, nor are you saying that the bad human being can't say it. You are saying this in spite of whether you happen to be bad or good, because neither your badness nor your goodness makes it true that I have meat the world knows not of. Only my spiritual identity as the child of God enables me to say, I have meat. It is not by virtue of being a good human being that any one of us can say we are joint heirs with Christ. Oh, no. The Master, in so many ways, showed that good humanhood is as far from heaven as the other type. He told you that with John the Baptist, whom he acknowledged to be the best of the Hebrew prophets of the day, and yet said that the least of you would get into heaven before John the Baptist. In the same way that the scribes and the Pharisees were the very best of the Hebrews, the most religious, the greatest worshippers of the one God, the greatest supporters of the temple. Being good was a fanaticism with them. They had to be so good that it was painful. And yet, the Master said that your goodness must transcend that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Your goodness must be greater than that. Well, it couldn't be humanly. They had already attained about perfection. Oh, no. Your goodness comes in your ability to realize that not by virtue of your goodness, nor could you be deprived by virtue of your badness, but that the kingdom of God in you was yours by virtue of your spiritual identity, your oneness with God. The moment that you are courageous enough to throw aside your badness, past or present, and in the same breath to throw aside your goodness, throw them both out. And give yourself no credit for the good, no condemnation for the evil, and declare for yourself your spiritual identity in God, your Christhood, your spiritual sonship, and then you will find that in this relationship to God, you are one with God, you are the child of God, you are joint heir with God to all of the heavenly riches. As long as you think that your evils are keeping you from it, or that your good is getting you close to it, you are missing the way by the same million miles. The one who believes that some error, some temporary evil, some mistake of omission or commission is separating them from God is just as far off the beam as the person who believes that their goodness is earning them God's grace. No one attains God's grace by goodness. You attain God's grace by the realization of your spiritual identity, and in the recognition of your spiritual identity, you will be good from every spiritual way that there is. How that measures up with human goodness, I have no way of knowing. But I do know that spiritual integrity comes only in our relationship to God, not by virtue of any personal virtues, not by virtue of any personal sacrifices or efforts. Let us in any moment realize that my human experience of the past and present, my human experience of good and evil, are but two phases of a mortal dream, are but two phases of an illusory experience, but then in my soul I am God being. In my inner light, I am the child of God. In the depths of my inner being, I am one with God and I have meat. I don't earn it or deserve it, but I have it. And I have it by virtue of inheritance. I'm sure many of you have inherited or will inherit much that you will know in your heart and soul you haven't deserved or earned. More so will you find this to be true spiritually when you find God's grace pouring itself upon you faster than you can accept it and realize nothing of my human life entitles me to this. In the same way that I say to you, I have witnessed people in serious conditions of disease and insanity. And I say to you from the deepest conviction in my heart, not one of them ever did anything to deserve such a fate, such punishment, such horror. No one in the history of the world has ever been that evil. Therefore, I know that nothing could visit upon us the horrors of human existence except our hypnotism with this belief in two powers. Only that continuing in the belief of good and evil, that we have been good or that we have been evil, or that there are good influences and that there are evil influences, all of this perpetuates this humanhood with its temporary good and temporary evil and more evil than good. Inwardly realizing, not voicing it outwardly, for what you know in secret will be spread from the housetop. Realizing inwardly, sacredly and secretly, my good is by virtue of inheritance. My good is spiritual. My good is what Peter and John describe. Silver and gold have I none, such as I have, give I unto thee. This is my spiritual heritage, that which Peter and John were able to give, that I am able to receive and in turn to give. My heritage is spiritual. My nature is spiritual. I am of the kingdom of God. Because of my inheritance, because of my oneness with the Father, all that the Father hath is mine. Therefore, I have meat the world knows not of. I do not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. I do not live by might or by power, but by the Spirit of God, because there is no need for might or power. There are not two powers. There is no need for might or power. There is need only for the realization that I live by grace. Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. I live by grace. Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. Not thy power. Not a miracle, just thy grace. Thy grace. And there is no power to oppose that grace because there is only one power. You know, Paul glimpsed this when he said, neither life nor death can separate me from the love of God. Neither life nor death. There's no place where you can go and be separated from God's care, God's jurisdiction, God's life, God's law. It is this that I see cropping up in the writings every so often. Whether we live on this side of the veil or that side of the veil is of no importance, except to a few people who temporarily will miss our physical presence. But very soon, when that absence is healed, nothing has changed, no one has lost anything, nothing has been hurt. For in God, life and death are the same thing. Light and darkness are the same thing. Life and death are mortal appearances. Life and death are human illusions. Therefore, either one is the same as the other. They both have the same substance, nothingness. When you are through seeing a difference between life and death, you'll understand the meaning of the word immortality. Immortality has nothing to do with life or death, for life and death are but illusory pictures. But immortality is the spiritually real. Eternality is the spiritually real. incorporeality is the spiritually real. But when you speak of life and death in the ordinary sense of the word, you're speaking of two phases of human illusion, just like when you speak of disease or health, poverty or wealth, sin or purity, you are speaking of two phases of human illusion. And you have to overcome, when you're on the spiritual path, you have to overcome both the evil and the good. It's true, in our first stage, we're trying to change ill health into good health. But as you proceed on this path, you will realize that you have to rise just as high above good health as you did above bad health, into the realm and the realization and the consciousness of God's presence as spirit. Thank you. Thank you.